My name is Alan Price, and I'm a senior consultant in MacArthur's Telearchitects division. We're the HR consulting arm of MacArthur. Today's podcast is part of our series titled Leading in the Public Interest, which will look at the people and the issues involved in our public sector organisations with a focus on local government. Amanda Stone is a councillor at Yarra City Council with a passion for and deep interest in deliberative democracy. In particular, she's interested in how it can enhance the work of local government through encouraging two-way conversations about the many important and complex issues facing our communities. She was recently awarded a MacArthur Fellowship to undertake a project to develop guidelines for councils and the use of deliberative democracy processes. As is the case for all of us, a project like this is the culmination of the many years of experience we have over an extended period of time. And this is something I want to look at with Amanda today. Thanks for joining us, Amanda, and being part of our podcast series, Leading in the Public Interest. We share a common start to our working lives. We both set out on our professional journeys as chalkies, teaching in Victorian government secondary schools. When I tell younger people I was a chalky, they look at me like, what's a chalky? And then I tell them what's a teacher. And when I started teaching, we in fact still did use chalk and blackboard.
Yes,
so that's going back a few years. So, Amanda, can you give us a brief overview of your teaching career?
Oh, my goodness. I fell into it. Like many young people of that era, I took a studentship, which was paid for my tertiary education and paid a small living allowance, and that allowed me to live out of home. Education is a very rich environment, as you would know, Alan, and I eventually found many elements of teaching education, working in schools and with young people, that gave me something to drive, to be actively involved in, to feel purposeful and to be really motivated about. And I had 33 years of doing that.
Wow.
And very happy.
Fantastic. Yeah. Did you serve any of your indentured time in the country, which is typically the way the Education Department used those studentships to send teachers who had just graduated to hard-to-staff schools, often in the country?
No, I didn't. I went into the office in the city and someone came out with a piece of paper and said, you're going to Newlands High School, see you later, report on Monday. So that was in Coburg.
Right.
It's a school that subsequently closed down. Mm-hmm. It was at its height of European immigration settlement around that area. And it was also in an era where fairly authoritarian approaches to education and care and development of young people were popular. And that's where I started my teaching career, and it felt quite wrong, I have to tell you. I mean, the teachers also had that attitude. It was a very authoritarian environment.
Yes.
I had parents at parent-teacher night saying, you have my permission to hit him.
Absolutely.
That kind of thing. And I was seeing kids that needed nurturing and assistance in their development, and it was actually a hard road for the first few years.
I can imagine. The 33 years that you talked about of your life as a teacher, how did that shape and influence the way you thought about decision-making in organisations?
Educational institutions are socially very complex places, and people have a lot invested in them. Everyone's invested in the education and development of young people, of course. So overlaid onto that is the need for a very strong sense of purpose, why we're all there, and shared values to underpin that. And if you don't have those two things, plus an understanding that we're all people and these are complex interactions and we need to understand that, I think you'll struggle in that kind of environment, particularly with decision-making and problem-solving.
You also had a stint as an assistant principal in a school.
Yeah.
I imagine that gave you pause to reflect about what leadership means and how it gets enacted in organisations. What did it stimulate in you in terms of thinking about leadership?
That was a very interesting period. I was filling in for someone who was on extended sick leave for a couple of years before they retired. And what I learnt from that was how important it is to be really transparent about decisions, even though people may not like or agree with them. If they understand the values base and the priorities on which they are made and how you've weighed up that decision, if the purpose and the values are shared, You may not agree with the outcome, but you can understand where it's come from. And I think people get very distressed about decisions when they don't understand mm-hmm. where they've come from.
Absolutely. 2008 was a bit of a watershed year for you. Two major things happened. You went to Qatar to run some professional development programs for teachers over there, and you got elected for the first time as a councillor to the Yarra City Council, where you pretty shortly became the mayor, as I recall.
At the same time.
At the same time. What I'd like you to tell us is a little bit about the work you did in Qatar, because the cultural milieu would have been totally different and would have been an amazing exercise to do.
It was. Qatar, they wanted to invest in the education of the population so they would have alternatives to selling oil and gas in the future. What we found was that the same issues there existed as for us. Mm-hmm. There were a lot of kids who came out of families where education hadn't been a priority. They were thrown into a system that they didn't particularly relate to. There were a lot of female teachers, as there are here. Mm-hmm. They were mostly expats. Most of the teachers were from other countries. And they were really struggling with the behaviour mm-hmm. of boys mm-hmm. in particular. So we threw some of that out and delivered what they want, which was teaching strategies for boys.
So in the midst of all of this going on with a really busy professional life, and I imagine personal social life as well, you decided to stand for council. Why?
It had been on my mind for a while. There were things I was thoroughly engaged in my education career and didn't want to leave, but I felt I was at a point where I could do that. I'd also been very active locally for a long time with a lot of issues, and I was really interested to see what I could progress again on the other side of the fence, the imaginary fence, in decision-making and policy and strategy. So I just felt ready to give it a go.
So when did deliberative democracy come onto your radar screen?
I think that whole idea of bringing people with you in decision-making and problem-solving had been there for a long time. Mm-hmm. I'd taken that approach in education, although, you know, schools are fairly hierarchical structures. I had endeavoured to do that. I'd introduced a restorative practices approach in education, for example, to conflict resolution, which was very effective.
Right.
Just bringing people together to solve, to see conflict as a breakdown in a relationship and solving that rather than having winners and losers, right and wrong, good and bad. Similarly, in local government, it seemed that people were getting very upset at decisions that local government were making, where there were things that they could achieve through working with the local government and understanding the system. So I just thought that if we could have more of a level playing field where the decision makers and those affected by them could work together on the problem that decisions were solving, that there might be greater acceptance right. of the decisions and there might be better decisions. I'd had that experience through a very long community campaign and that was really effective, and I thought that it was possible, particularly things that affect a lot of people.
I mean, if I was to read Deliberative Democracy for Dummy, how would it describe deliberative democracy and the processes associated with it?
Well, it's a form of participatory democracy where the decision-making or part of the decision-making or problem-solving is shared with the community. Mm-hmm. Ideally, a representative group of the community is selected to participate, because you can't ask every single person what they think. But the most important part of deliberative democracy is getting a representative group.
How do you get a truly representative sample that ensures all the voices of the community are heard, and not just the confident, articulate, politically aware individuals or the squeaky wheels?
That's one of the greatest challenges of deliberative democracy, Alan. In every council, there are very active citizens who, for many reasons, have good access to decision makers already. And in deliberative democracy, you want to hear from the wider range. So we have to bear in mind that the very active citizens that we hear from a lot already actually have a great deal of knowledge, understanding of issues, and therefore a lot to add, a lot of value to. You do need to select a sample that is representative broadly, but you also do need to generally find a way to incorporate those knowledgeable citizen activists somehow. For example, in Yarra, with reviewing our planning scheme, we did collected a stratified sample, but we also, on top of that sample, reserved some spots for these citizen activists who had knowledge and experience in this particular area, and we included them. But the role of the facilitator was absolutely vital in ensuring the voices that were heard were everybody and not just those that had the greatest confidence.
Amanda, you've got an incredibly diverse community in the city of Yarra. Mm. I don't know exactly what the percentage would be, but I imagine a high percentage of your people are from non-English speaking backgrounds. They typically don't participate in these kind of processes because of their concerns about lack of English or whether there's some kind of political slash cultural baggage that they're carrying from the countries of origin. How can you make sure that those voices are also incorporated?
People participate in different ways. Some of our community do participate in council processes, but they don't come to council meetings, they don't write emails, they don't ring us up. What you do need to create through a deliberative process is a level playing field, something that is culturally accessible to everybody. And again, that's the skill of the facilitator and who's providing the process to do, and then the management of the process within that. You might have a situation in a deliberative process where the articulate, confident folk are not as comfortable. They're outside their comfort zone, as well as some of the newer arrivals from culturally and linguistically different backgrounds. So it's really about levelling the playing field and giving everyone as equal an opportunity as you can.
Young people typically don't participate in forums like this. They live their lives, a lot of it, online or using social media and different processes associated with social media to express their views. Mm. How challenging has it been to identify and involve young people in your processes?
It is, although it depends on the topic, you know, and there are some subjects that young people will engage with very actively, and I'm sure some of the citizens' assemblies in the UK are engaging younger people. We had a deliberative parking forum at Yarra last weekend, and that attracted quite a lot of younger people, but they were interested in sustainable transport, not parking, so they had a particular perspective to bring as well. But you're right, you do have to work particularly hard to involve younger people in a process like that.
But it's interesting, isn't it, that you come to the process with almost a questioning mind in the sense of what we want to get input to parking.
Yes.
And then the people that you've involved in the process say, well, you know what, it's really not about parking, it's about sustainable transport. How do you then make that kind of adjustment from where you thought the process was going to go to where it ends up going?
Well, that's the deliberation part. It's actually not up to us. It's up to the participants. And not everybody will see parking as being about sustainable transport. Some will see it as about the ability to park their car out the front of their house 7 days a week without being challenged. And those views can be really interesting to have around the same table. Part of the process that people need to go through is to hear and understand other perspectives, to understand the dilemmas that the council faces in trying to balance these competing perspectives and views, and from an informed perspective, suggest how we manage it. How do we manage public space?
It's interesting, reflecting on the comment you've just made, it adds another dimension to the deliberative democracy process, and that is it's educative for the community to understand the dilemmas council faces as much as it is for council to get input from the community about the kind of decisions that they would like to see taken.
One of the primary roles of this process, that very often citizens who are involved in a deliberative democracy activity become ambassadors for the issue within the community. We certainly found that in reviewing our planning scheme at Yarra, that the citizens who were involved in that found it a really invaluable experience. It enriched their understanding of their city and the issues that they faced. They've become ambassadors, if you like, for dealing with the complexities and the contradictions that we're facing all the time.
So how is deliberative democracy different from the plebiscite process that we've just seen recently with the same-sex marriage, and which is used in Scandinavian countries as part of the decision-making process?
Well, a plebiscite is like an endpoint, isn't it? It's, mm-hmm. it's like a vote on one issue with one of two, maybe three options mm-hmm. or outcomes. Mm-hmm. Deliberative democracy is a process. A deliberative democracy takes a representative group of people through a process of looking at dilemmas, if mm-hmm. you like, information, the information the decision makers would have, the conflicts around this, the trade-offs that might need to be made, different mm-hmm. perspectives and different needs of different groups, and maybe coming up with some agreed solutions, but maybe coming up with some options
right.
that have considered the trade-offs. It's the focus on the process and the people understanding the issue and coming to an informed, deliberated advice to decision makers rather than just voting on one outcome,
right.
which is what a plebiscite is.
Great. Thanks for clarifying that. You spoke before about the project that you're about to embark on, and one of the things you're trying to look at is how you, in fact, select and involve people in the process.
Mm.
Can you give us an overview of the project?
I am interested in looking at where deliberative processes have been used elsewhere mm-hmm. outside Victoria and what we can learn from those. I'm planning on looking at a couple of places where they are embedded in the decision-making system. One of those is Portland, Oregon, mm-hmm. where neighbourhood associations have been part of the makeup of local government there for a long time, but they've just been completely reviewed, and that was a very contentious process. So I think there will be a lot to learn from that, mm-hmm. and they have mm-hmm. restructured that whole citizen engagement
right.
approach there. So I think we can learn something from embedding this. Germany also, these processes are embedded in a lot of the local governments there.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm also interested in looking at places where they've had used deliberative processes in a one-off situation and why governments, local governments, have chosen to use this approach for that particular type
right.
of problem, what they were hoping to
mm-hmm.
achieve,
mm-hmm.
whether they achieved it, and what they actually did with the advice. One of those places is Vancouver. I've spoken to people there a few times now and observed over time an urban renewal project
mm-hmm.
in the downtown east side area there, which was very conflicted and actually, like a lot of inner Melbourne situations, we've got a lot to learn. Very ambitious project. It looked like it was going really well 4 years ago. When I was there last year, some of it's unravelling. Very interesting how and why mm-hmm. that's happening. It's new factors, new politicians, new bureaucrat, regeneration of community groups.
That, right.
So it seems that decisions achieved through deliberative democracy or recommendations are never an end point. It's a dynamic environment and you need to keep revisiting
right.
these. So I think there'll be a lot to learn from Vancouver. And then, of course, in the UK, there's been a rash of citizens' assemblies
mm-hmm.
being run, particularly in response to the Extinction Rebellion demand,
mm-hmm.
if you like,
mm-hmm.
for citizens' assemblies, and that in itself is very interesting, demanding a citizen assembly. If the origin of one of those is a demand, how does that kind of fit with this idea of citizens' assemblies being deliberative and equitable and involving a genuine cross-section of the community if it's been demanded? But the UK's also used citizens' assemblies to address issues as broadly as aged care, early years, education, transport, air pollution. So I'm interested in looking at how those councils have chosen deliberative democracy for those issues and why not another approach and what they've learnt from them.
It's interesting that you're talking about doing this at the same time as our national politics in Australia, certainly, but more so in the UK and America, have become increasingly conflictual, increasingly polarised, increasingly partisan. The approach that you're talking about really is almost in direct contradiction of that development. How do you see those two things, those two contradictory ideas, kind of marching hand in glove?
I think what I'm looking at deliberative democracy and other similar approaches is an antidote
mm-hmm.
to
mm-hmm.
what we've seen as the rise of fairly authoritarian populist
mm-hmm.
leadership. The attractions in that for people where they appear to provide certainty in a world that's increasingly uncertain and the comfort that that provides to people, whereas there are other forms of confidence that people can derive in governments and decisions, and deliberative democracy is not the answer, but it is, I'm sure, it could be part of a different way of doing politics and making decisions and of partnering with the community rather than command and control, which is kind of outdated and very, very limited.
Yeah. It's interesting, and it goes back in some ways to some of the comments you made about your experience as a teacher and the involvement of people in decision-making and their sense of commitment to a decision to which they could at least contribute, even if the decision ended up being a different one than the one they hoped for.
Because we all start somewhere with a view, and if we're not assisted to develop that view and position with more information and other perspectives, we sit with that view and invariably we'll come into conflict with someone with a different view. So if you can bring people on a journey, and they might still hold that view, but at least give them the opportunity to broaden and develop their thinking and understanding, I think that's actually a great gift.
Absolutely. Okay, so Amanda, let's jump forward 12 to 18 months. You've done your investigations, you've travelled around, you've spoken with people, you've looked at the application of deliberative democracy in a range of different settings, and now you've got a head full of ideas. How do you propose to disseminate the findings of your project so that people can access all the stuff that you found out?
Well, I am required to produce a report for the Municipal Association of Victoria, the MAV, and that will be provided to them and a report at their conference next year. But I also do plan to produce some kind of document electronically available, possibly on a web for local councils across Victoria, that will help them with some of the decisions they might want to make about using deliberative processes. So it will include various situations that I've investigated, why deliberative democracy was chosen, what sort of problem was chosen to address, who made the decision, whether it was council, administration, the community, who implemented the process, and how the participants experienced it. And then finally, and very importantly, what the decision makers did with the recommendations that came out of it. Because I think they're the sorts of things that councils will want to know about, the experiences of others. And, of course, I've got lots of networks in local government and I plan to use those to make this information available as widely as possible. And finally, one other thing I would really like to explore is the possibility of some kind of global network, perhaps just a blog or something similar, to connect all the local governments that are dabbling in or some are more seriously involved in deliberative democracy processes. There is certainly an increase in interest, and different cities and different countries are trialling deliberative democracy, and I think they have a lot to learn from each other. And it would be great to find a place to locate all of those experiences so that anyone who's interested can access it.
Great. That's a challenge that we've got at an organisational level. I remember somebody once using the quote to me, if organisations only knew what they know.
Yes.
So what we've got here is that organisational dilemma writ large globally. Yes. So I think what you're talking about would be a fantastic initiative if you were able to pull it off.
The crisis in democracy is a global crisis. It needs us to all work together.
So what are the risks associated, Amanda, with the use of deliberative democratic processes?
Well, these processes can be quite intricate. They involve a lot of investment on the behalf of the council, but also on behalf of the community. You are actually asking people to give up a lot of time and to contribute to themselves and their own thinking and experience to getting a good outcome. So you need to be pretty clear up front about what you are going to do with the recommendations that the community panel comes up with. The worst thing would be to have everyone invest all this time and energy, have a series of recommendations, and then decision makers who either don't respond, won't respond, or can't respond. And have been either unclear or ambivalent about what they're going to do with the decisions.
I imagine people get quite emotionally invested in the process as well as giving of the time which you spoke of, and then the risk of disappointing them if, when you can't, don't or won't implement some of the things that come out through the democratic processes that you're talking about.
When you're bringing people into decision-making, there's a lot at stake for everybody. And when you do that, you actually have a deal that you're making with people that we're asking you to help us make some difficult decisions, and we're going to make those difficult decisions using your advice and your input. So it's really important in confidence in democratic processes. And if you can't fulfil that expectation, at least part, then you are dealing another blow to the confidence that people might have in local government.
Let's jump forward another 3 years, so we're in 2023, let's say. How are you hoping that deliberative democracy and the process associated with it will impact decision-making in the city of Yarra and in the sector more broadly?
I would hope that they could be considered to be part of a toolbox of community engagement. It's not easy, and in some cases it can be quite demanding of resources. So you want to select these approaches most appropriately. So I would hope that local governments felt confident enough to say, yes, this is a situation where deliberative processes mm-hmm. would help us, would help our community, would get us a better decision and might get us a decision that would have higher community acceptance, mm-hmm. which will allow us all to get on with what we need to do and do it well. So I'm hoping that it would be more accessible mm-hmm. to local councils and that they would have more confidence to use them.
Great. Final question from me, Amanda. You're obviously passionate about local government. Why should people stand for their local council?
It's the best job in the world, you know. It's the hardest thing I've ever done, but it's been the most rewarding, not just for me, but because, of course, it's the level of government closest to the people. Our phones and emails are available 24 mm-hmm. hours a day, 7 days a week. You need to be prepared for that. You have a direct impact on your constituency. You can hear, get all the information you need from the people you are representing, and in turn, eventually, however you get there, whether it's deliberative processes or whatever, you are in a position of making decisions and forming directions that actually serve people well, and you can see the impact of that.
Amanda, thanks very much for your time. Good luck with the project. I really look forward to reading your report that you're committed to creating, and perhaps we'll come back after the project's finished and get some reflections from you in a year or 18 months' time. Thank you very much.
You're welcome, Alan.
Vijaya Vaidyanath was one of a number of people who endorsed Amanda Stone's submission for the 2019 MacArthur Fellowship. Why was she such a strong supporter of Amanda and the project she presented to the Fellowship Selection Committee? What does she see as the major issues associated with the use of deliberative democracy in the local government sector? Vijaya Vaidyanath is the CEO of the City of Yarra, a position she's held for 8 years. Prior to that, she held CEO roles over a 12-year period in local government in New Zealand. It was in New Zealand that she first experienced the application of deliberative democracy. Vijaya made it clear at the outset that her support of Amanda's application was a personal and not an organisational endorsement. Her experience of deliberative democracy in New Zealand was the result of a change to the Local Government Act that required community input to the development of council's long-term vision and plans. The purpose was to encourage the community to share their aspirations and for these to be incorporated into the planning process. It would also help councillors and council staff to understand whether a bottom-up view of developing council plans and policies could work. She first applied the approach when she was the CEO of the Rodney District Council in New Zealand, and they were required to develop a long-term community plan. Vijaya felt it was important for her and the council to understand what the community thought should be contained in the community plan. As she said, we went with a blank sheet of paper and we didn't have town hall meetings. Instead, staff met with members of the community sitting in dusty community halls at night and engaging with young people, going to markets to meet people where they live, work, shop and play. They used the World Cafe methodology, an approach designed to bring out the many different perspectives people bring to the issue under consideration, and builds on these to find the best possible planning or policy responses. This kind of local engagement gave Vijaya a deep appreciation of the role deliberative democracy could play in involving the community in decision-making. It was also enriching for her as a CEO and confirmed the importance of not going to the community with a pre-prepared plan and asking them, "What do you think of what we've done?" According to Vijaya, using a deliberative democracy approach does not mean council is abdicating its role. It's not about handing over decision-making to the community. It's about balancing the mandate given to the elected representatives with bringing the previously unheard voices and unseen faces into the mix. It is the community telling their elected members and appointed staff how they could look at improving outcomes for the community. That's why when Amanda threw her hat into the ring, Vijaya was very passionate about supporting it. When I asked what it was about Amanda's approach that particularly appealed to Vijaya, she referred to the level of authenticity in Amanda's application. She was able to speak with knowledge and authority in her application because of her exposure to deliberative democracy in New Zealand and at Yarra, where she worked on Yarra Council's Active Ageing Advisory Group and more recently on the Livable Yarra Project. Seeing Amanda at work on these projects gave Vijaya assurance that if someone was to push this in Victoria, maybe Amanda could be that person. Vijaya is not under any illusions about the challenges of applying deliberative democracy to council decision-making. It's very resource-hungry. It is extraordinarily demanding of people's commitment and time. It's onerous and demanding. You can't just click your fingers and expect it to work. Consulting the community creates expectations that their contributions, at the very least, be given serious consideration. If people sense at all that it is a charade, your authenticity on this and other matters is lost. Councillors can also feel threatened by the process, taking the view that they are elected to their roles and it's their job to make decisions. Some people might also feel that given rate capping and all the other financial demands on councils, councillors should just get on with the job and leave them out of it. Whilst planning is the obvious area of council activity where the deliberative democracy approach can be applied, it has also been used in other areas of council activities. Darabin used this approach in their budgeting processes. They limited to their capital expenditure program, which they discussed with their community. 4 or 5 years ago, Melbourne City Council also experimented with this approach when they looked at the question of how to best manage their finances. The new Local Government Act, currently under consideration in Victoria, is seriously looking at how communities can develop their long-term vision using a more consultative and collaborative approach. Vijaya sees this as a good starting point. You're not trying to do everything and anything. You're attempting a more inclusive and consultative approach and being serious about getting the community's input to their view of the future. And importantly, views are being sought from people who have not previously interacted in a situation like this. The disenchantment with politics and our elected representatives has been well documented recently. There is a sense that our politicians and political processes have been captured by vested interests represented by lobbyists, some of whom are recently retired politicians. The normal citizen is shut out of the process. Vijaya sees this happening more and more, leading to a sense of alienation, a sense of, do we really matter? Why should I bother? And that leads to people questioning why they should even vote. Why should we participate? You're not going to listen to me. If there is some kind of a legislative imperative, at least people can say, hey, you have to at least talk with us, ask for our views. This is likely to require an expanded repertoire of skills on the part of facilitators and to be armed with more leadership angles, but at least it is a way to open the door for people. If you have no doors open, then you are always going to be captured by the articulate few. There is a role for councillors, either as facilitators or as observers. Whatever role they play, they need to feel involved and informed about what is going on. Even if they participate only as observers, they feel included in the process and can understand the diverse views members of the community bring to the issue. Vijay's experience is that using a more consultative approach gives council officers the ability to speak with councillors about the range of perspectives that have emerged over time. This represents an amalgam of different views and diverse voices not normally captured. In the absence of such input, what typically happens when an issue or policy is being debated at a council meeting is that the only voices heard are those who are at the meeting, and these are rarely representative of all the views held in the community. Using a deliberative process that progressively unearths multiple perspectives makes it hard to ignore the range of opinions expressed. Vijaya is optimistic that Amanda's contribution will be to create, if not a toolkit, then at least a handy guide for council to use, one that describes the processes to be applied and the minefields that need to be navigated. Vijaya's final words of advice were for council to experiment with deliberative democracy on a small scale. Don't try to boil the ocean, she said, and councils can then learn their way forward to a wider application that is likely to be required under the new Local Government Act soon to be proclaimed. Thank you for listening to our first podcast in the series titled Leading in the Public Interest. Today, we featured Amanda Stone, a councillor from the City of Yarra and a recipient of the 2019 MacArthur Fellowship. If there are any issues or people you believe would be of interest to the sector, please let us know. You can find our contact details on the podcast description on the MacArthur website. We look forward to you joining us for our next podcast that will feature a recently retired local government CEO who will reflect on a life of public service. Today's show was produced by Lynn Dang. The music was composed by Gideon Price. Until next time.